Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After today's presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. To ask a question at that time, please press star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Shannon Bell. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you so much. This is Shannon Bell, Director of the Office of Advocacy Relations, and we are delighted that so many folks could join us today to learn a little bit more about the transformation that's going on in the cooperative group structure. I am delighted to introduce Dr. James Doroshow, who is Director of the NCI Division of Cancer Treatment and Diagnosis, to provide you with more information on that. And I will turn it over to Dr. Doroshow.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be able to speak to you all this afternoon. And what I would like to do is spend maybe 10 to 15 minutes, hopefully not even that, to go over some of the things that we've talked about recently with the chairs of the cooperative groups and that were presented a few days ago at the Clinical Trials and Translational Research Advisory Committee meeting. Many of you, I'm sure, have gone to the website where the slide presentation from that meeting is now available. And so I won't go through every slide because you can see those things for yourself, and it probably will be more valuable to be able to ask questions. But let me just begin by saying that we have been working for many years, not just since the IOM committee published its report in April, but actually something close to 6 years since the Clinical Trials Working Group began its activities in 2004 and published its report in 2005 to try to improve the entire spectrum of clinical trials activities that the NCI supports. Many of the activities that are outlined and recommended in the IOM report actually are taken specifically from those that preceded it, from the recommendations that preceded it, and a lot of progress has been made along those lines. And so we were very pleased. We supported, as you know, and helped to fund the IOM report and are very pleased by the recommendations that came out in April. Since that time, my colleagues and I have worked very hard to try to interpret the recommendations by the Institute of Medicine and try to transform those recommendations into an implementable series of plans to move forward with. And we have been in discussion with the cooperative group chairs in terms of how we can together move forward to implement those recommendations. Let me just start at a very high level to give you some sense of, I think, what all of us would like to achieve, and that is to take a system that has been in many ways transformational over a 55-year period and to move that from a series of 10 separately funded, specifically goal-focused organizations into much more of a national network that will become the main infrastructure for all of the trials that the NCI supports in the realm of randomized phase 2 and phase 3 investigations. As many of you know, there has been over the past perhaps 10 or 15 years a lot written and many attempts to try to make that system more efficient, and we hope that what we're going to discuss this afternoon will be a major step in that direction. But really, start at the end, what we're looking for is an interactive group of organizations that can not only perform studies more efficiently, faster, but also working together and judged in review, not only for their own independent and separate scientific achievements, but also for their participation and achievements as a national network, can be reviewed in that fashion, and which we very much think will allow us to do a whole variety of different scientifically important types of clinical trials more effectively to reach audiences that have been difficult to reach in part because of the vagaries of the review system over the past several years, and also to make the case that as the efficiency and, if you will, coordination of this system is improved, to make the case that it needs additional resources, which we're all very, very well aware of. And so let me, I think it's also relevant to give you some idea of what we see this turning out to be and what some of the metrics might be in the change that we're anticipating. So we're anticipating, as called for by the IOM report, that we will, a few years from now, end up with a network of four adult multidisciplinary clinical trials organizations and one for pediatric multidisciplinary pediatric clinical trials organizations that, working together, will do a better job, a more effective job, of performing studies in less common malignancies, performing studies that require quite sophisticated imaging modalities that will allow us to use the tools of modern molecular biology to rapidly characterize tumors and apply those molecular characterizations to studies, which will function together with another ongoing process, that is our attempt to harmonize our national tissue banking resources, to use those resources more effectively, not only for studies supported by this network, but actually for studies that are going on and will be supported in a whole variety of different ways across the variety of NCI-supported mechanisms. We're also very interested, and this is something that, I'll just be honest with you, is not something that is in the IOM report, but I think is very important to the NCI, and that is that we're interested in the best ideas wherever they come from, whether they come from a cooperative group committee, they come from cancer centers or SPORs, wherever the best idea comes from, we're interested in getting those investigators, making it possible for those investigators to utilize this efficient national network to do the kinds of trials that really will be the should be the paradigm for 2010. And sorry, at last, but certainly not least, and I'm going to get talk a little bit about review criteria, and then have this open this up to all of you. We need a way, and I think everyone, or at least many on the phone, understand the economic environment that we're in now. We need a way to, with the help of the scientific community, the cooperative group leadership, but also scientific leadership across the U.S., to be able to prioritize across all diseases what we're going to invest in. It may seem obvious that there must have been a way to do that in the past. That's really not been the case. We have developed a way to better prioritize, at least to take the NCI out of the prioritization process and put the prioritization into the hands of the investigators and the experts in the community, including advocates who participate in those decisions over the past 4 or 5 years. And we're almost, but not quite, done in setting up the system to do that. But once you now have a group disease by disease to help prioritize the trials that are going to go forward, we are at a point where some studies, because of their size, have to be thought about on a national perspective. And so we hope to be able to set up a way to do that across disease, across modalities, modalities of care that has not been possible. So what's going to happen going forward? Well, immediately, nothing happens. That is to say, we will continue the support of the groups, and we have worked very hard with our colleagues in the Division of Extramural Activities to think about how we can develop a process for this integration and transformation. And so we will have at least six, it may be as much as 8 or 9 months to work and get input from the cooperative groups, from advocates, in terms of how this whole process is going to develop. At that time, hopefully by the end of next summer, we will have developed a concept for a new RFA. And then that, in addition, has to be accompanied by, based on the requirements from NIH Central, a very detailed series of documents outlining the guidelines for how this clinical trials network will work. That will take roughly on the order of another 9 months to get approved. And so it's our expectation that somewhere mid to either early to mid-2012, we will actually have on the street a funding vehicle that the potential applicants for who will lead these various pieces of this new network will we'll have to respond to, and that hopefully proposals will be ready for review just about 2 years from now, maybe a little less if we're fortunate. So this may seem like a prolonged time frame, but we actually view this as very valuable because it allows, number one, for us to get a substantial amount of input into how the system should be conceived, and number two, it allows the eventual participants in this activity to have a substantial amount of time before they submit a grant to make, I think, some meaningful changes and for us to actually help support those meaningful changes in advance of, well in advance of the time any grant is required. And because this is, we understand, an extraordinarily complex, perhaps, I'm not trying to say this in a boastful way, perhaps the most complicated funding activity that the NCI engages in across the entire board of all of the activities that we do. And so we understand that this is a very, very complicated process. What is something new that has not happened, certainly in the last 10 years, probably substantially longer, is that all of the potential applicants will come in at once. And so there will be external peer review of all of the applications for the participants in this network, and they will be judged one versus another. This will give us actually a chance to look very closely at the funding for each of these entities and to be able to reward those groups that have been the most successful. That's been a very difficult thing over the past, certainly in my 6.5 years here and going back before that, when the applications came in on a rolling basis, almost impossible to reward the real, true excellence. I think that is something that will be very appropriate. On the other hand, we expect that because of the achievements of the these applicants, that we're looking to get really outstanding proposals to be able to support this activity moving forward. So I don't know how long I've been on, but perhaps how long? I've been on 17 minutes. So I'm 7 minutes longer than I said I was going to be. So I want to allow you to be able to ask questions, and also in a little while my colleague Dr. Manasian is going to be online, who, as you know, runs the CCOP program. So she should also be able to help answer some of your questions.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. And to withdraw your question, please press star 2. And again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment, please.
Did somebody ask a question?
One moment, please, for the first question.
So is that mostly the clinical trials that we're referring to? Is it referring to CCOM clinical trials?
I believe so.
Robert Irwin, your line is open.
Thank you. I appreciate this presentation and all of the hard work that's gone into it. And I am very happy with a lot of what you've described and the material you sent out in advance. My question has more to do with the time frame. You mentioned that it might seem like a fairly slow process to some of us. I must admit that it does seem incredibly slow. And I'm wondering if you've considered using some of the techniques that extremely large, complex corporations use when they have to make substantial, radical, strategic changes, but do it far more rapidly than in a 2-year time frame. I understand that this is complex, but it's also, I think, a matter of real urgency.
So, believe me, I would love to go faster. I think our major time issue is the time it will take for the our external input that we need from the NIH Central. It takes them a very long time to review RFAs. And this won't simply be the usual 10 or 20 page RFA. So just to give you a sense, and I'm not trying to sugarcoat this, or and it is very from a remember I came here from a non-governmental position for 20
yeah.
years, so it is sometimes hard to understand. But we don't simply have to write the standard RFA for a, let's just take for example something that we did recently. There's an RFA that went out about a year ago for something like $5 million for to get new grants for estrogen receptor triple-negative breast cancer. It was a scientific proposal. We wanted applications of a certain type for one type of funding, a standard grant. That took months to get sign-off for. We not only have to develop the wording for an RFA, we'll have to develop something on the order of between 100 and 200-page guidelines document for the review of the RFA and to be reviewed in terms of what the network will consist of and what we'll want from these organizations. We certainly will employ outside very, very knowledgeable consultants. So the writing of that document won't necessarily be it's a considerable piece of work. It won't be as much an issue as having it reviewed in every detail before we can put it on the street. That really is a major hurdle. If I could speed that up by 6 months, we would hope to do so. On the other hand, the front end, and I'm interested in your feedback, given that this is a system that has been ongoing for 55 years, remember the first funding of the cooperative groups and the NCI's drug development plan occurred with an appropriation from Congress in November of 1955, and the first clinical trials activities started in 1956. So, this clearly is the most major change in over 50 years. I think the time up front to get as much input as possible is time well spent, because given that there are government regulations that say as soon as we are actually putting pen to paper to write up a proposal, we can no longer solicit the input from anyone, for example, who's on the phone or other scientific input.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the front end is extremely important, and it's going to be key to the success of everything that comes. One quick added smaller question, I guess. Are you comfortable that the funding and budget is adequate as the focus shifts more and more toward the clinical part of NCI's mission? That a lot of advocates have long felt that it was underfunded, and this may be an opportunity with this higher visibility to do something about that problem.
You know that I'm not allowed to ask for more money.
Yes.
You know that. I if I were in front of a congressional committee, I would never be able to.
Right.
Let me just phrase it this way. Number one, we're very well aware, and since you know that I had to run a large clinical trials program for many years, I know precisely what we're paying for and what we're not paying for, okay? And there's a lot that we're not paying for. And so the needs are very clear. And all I can do is express my appreciation to you and your colleagues for your understanding of those needs.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
That's pretty oblique, but
that's very helpful. Thank you.
And the next question comes from Nancy Roach. Your line is open.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for this presentation. And I have a comment and then a question. I am on CTAC, the Oversight Committee for the Implementation of the Clinical Trial Working Group Recommendations. And usually at CTAC meetings, I am very I'm like, why is this why aren't we doing more? Why aren't we going faster? And the meeting this week was the first meeting where I actually didn't feel like I had to say that, because I see things shifting in a very profound way, and it's truly wonderful to see this kind of change happening. My question is, what specifically are you going to do, or what will keep the same thing from happening again? Right. So right now we have 9 siloed, kind of siloed groups, and not a lot of interaction between preclinical and clinical. And so in 5 years, what's going to keep it from having 4 groups with the exact same situation?
So a superb question, and one that if the implications of which actually open up a whole series of very innovative possibilities. So I know I can't say to this group, you can't quote me, but if I quote somebody else, I think I'm on safe grounds, right? And so we had a meeting yesterday with the American College of Radiology and with the head of Akron and RTOG. And, it was a pretty freewheeling meeting, and a lot of interesting ideas were passed around. But, you know, the issue becomes we certainly want scientists and advocates to focus. We need critical scientific questions answered, and we think those can be developed in the context of, I don't think we need 10, but I think if we have 5 nationally oriented organizations, I think that provides a lot of opportunity for asking important questions. But the question specifically came up, and Dr. Curran of RTOG brought this up. Well, why couldn't, from a membership perspective, I'm not talking about a scientific contribution perspective, basically everyone who belongs to one of these groups actually belong, why couldn't you, in essence, you have a membership in the network so that everyone involved could do every study everywhere, right? And this is surely what our goal is to make every trial. So the notion for those on the phone who are really cooperative group cognoscenti, okay, you know what the endorsement rules are, and whether SWOG might endorse an ECOG trial, and so you get credit. And as my wife and daughter always tell me, it's always about credit, okay? But the fact is that the NCI doesn't care about the credit. We care about the trials getting done quickly to help patients, right? And so we want studies to be opened. We want a lot of intellectual ferment around what studies we should do. But once that decision is made, then we want all of the studies to be open and available and to accrue rapidly. And so, Nancy, I think the only way to answer your question appropriately is to say that we need to be, and we are also cognizant of this problem, and if 5 years from now we have 5 silos, we will have failed. The only way I see to absolutely make that not happen is to have the review criteria for coordination and participation and collaboration as a network be as important. If it doesn't count 25-30%, some major part of the review, people will ignore it, and the reviewers will ignore it. So we have to then develop guidelines that ensure that, you know, you can be great at doing your own thing, but if you don't participate in a basically on a national basis, then you're not going to do well in review. And at the end of the day, the review is what's critical in terms of determining funding. So that has to be a very important point, and is something that I would appreciate your, as always, continuing to ask us about, to make sure that at the end of the day, that is built into both our guidelines and our review criteria.
Okay, thanks.
And the next question comes from Kara Tenenbaum. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for this. I have a question, and we've been talking about this a lot, I think, with NCI with respect to research and especially with respect to the spores. But if you're going to consolidate and kind of have everything going up against each other, how are you going to take into account the fact that some cancers are kind of maybe more sophisticated in terms of their research, whereas others might need a little bump because they're deadly or less well understood?
So I guess let me answer a couple things. Again, if I was too abstruse, I apologize. So the two issues. One, we want very much to facilitate the transition of investigations that occur at cancer centers and spores in the early phase to ease that transition into larger trials, most likely multi-site randomized phase 2 studies, to really test scientific questions. I think the future really is one in which the bar is going to be higher to get to a phase 3 trial. We're going to demand more scientific information that will necessitate more correlative science being done at the point of the first, say, 200-patient randomized phase 2 investigation. To have that kind of science, what we really need is for the members of this network to work very closely with the spore community, because those are the folks who have and develop many of the correlative scientific assays that are necessary for those types of molecular characterization-based clinical trials, at least the initial phase of those. The other point, and it's probably a very good time to make that point now, is that we're very aware of the fact that, I can say this since I was a funded SWOG investigator for 25 years contributed an enormous amount of pro bono effort to the cooperative groups. One of the things that, especially over the last 5 to 10 years, the groups have not done as well, probably because of our review system, is to do critical studies in diseases that have a smaller incidence. Except for the Children's Oncology Group, we don't have a single sarcoma committee. And you guess, well, why is that? Is that because there's no scientific opportunities? No, that's not true at all. It's because, at least in my view, and I did participate in the review of the Southwest Oncology Group multiple times, the notion is these are not highly prevalent diseases, and so the organization tended to bend over backwards to make sure that there were studies in diseases that it was sure, absolutely sure, it could accrue to. It would not take risks because 5 years later at review, it might get significantly dinged because it had taken risks in areas that it wasn't sure that it could accrue. We have to change that. There are, I think, in my view, some enormous recent scientific opportunities in the area of head and neck cancer. We have only two committees that do head and neck cancer, and even if in the scientific community, for investigators who are superb and have great ideas, getting those groups to take on a trial that doesn't originate from the group has been very difficult. And so we just need a completely different approach to diseases that are less common, and that will almost certainly involve not one committee per a group, but actually scientific committees across the network that will develop trials, will be specifically supported, have monies allocated to getting where the scientific opportunity exists. Let me be clear, but when the scientific opportunity exists, if there are issues that can be addressed by the network, then each one of the individual participants is going to be viewed differently, and the risk to them is substantially less. Basically, the risk can be shifted to the NCI so that we can make sure that those kinds of activities go forward, because they are crucial, and I don't believe that we're doing the job that we need to do in that area now.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Paula Kim. Your line is open.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me? Hi, Jim. Thanks.
Hi, Paula.
So much for everything. It's exciting to see you in this next phase of this transformation. I know it's been a long long effort and a lot of work by a lot of people. A couple of questions. I thought Nancy's question was very interesting. And so I guess if I took it one step further, just to, you know, be a little bit of the other side of the coin, is by still going to the four groups, I understand that I think that's a step in the right direction. But to Nancy's point, how do we avoid, you know, becoming siloed still? So if you think about it from a business standpoint, if you had, for lack of a better way to say it, one group, let's say, but it had four divisions, if you will, and each division handled various body parts, which is how this has to be divided out. I guess I'm curious if you guys even explored that as one alternative? And then my second question, which is on a totally different angle here, is how, as advocates and folks on this call and beyond with our colleagues, how can we help with this transition? Because I'm sure it's going to be quite a transformation on all sides of the table, requiring, I think, a lot of good faith effort by a lot of people. So what are you? How can we best help you as well?
So let me just. We have a little bit of a feedback. I don't especially like hearing myself talk. is this better now, Paula? Can you hear me?
Yeah, it's better now.
Okay, great. We knew what was coming earlier this year. So I have to tell you, the better part of 9 months trying to think about various models. And I only very recently erased the whiteboard in my conference room that was just covered with various possibilities. Now, you know that the IOM specifically recommended 4 adult multidisciplinary groups. I'll just paint the pluses and minuses. And I know the following, okay? We want to have some competition for ideas, right? So I really didn't think that trying to put everything together into one adult group was feasible because we thought that we would lose some of that competition. Ultimately, what happens and how this network is viewed in the long run, that's a different question. But we also very much were concerned, in part because of the superb data that I don't know those of you who were, Nancy was there, but not at the most recent CTAC meeting, but the one before. Judy Hodala, our longtime consultant from the Science Technology Policy Institute, presented a small piece of an enormous management and financial analysis of the entire group system. I think she probably knows more about the groups than any one human being has ever known. To quantitate the pro bono effort, the institutional commitment and volunteerism, actually put a dollar figure on that, right? And so we gave a lot of thought to what might happen if we transitioned to a situation in which individuals who have given enormous amounts of their lives to these various entities, we're getting our reverb here. Sorry. If suddenly those all went away, and it's tens of millions, even hundreds of million dollars a year in volunteer effort. So we have to balance what would be optimal from a management perspective to the need for scientific, some competition in the scientific arena, clearly necessary, versus all of the incredible amount of effort that is on. I know for certain that, four is better than three. I think one is the wrong answer and nine is the wrong answer. It's probably the best way I can respond to you. That's the first part. Second part, maybe Shannon can take a crack at.
Absolutely.
Great. Thank you.
Hi, Paula. How are you?
Paula, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Advocates have been an integral part to the cooperative group system, and in fact, all of the processes that have thus far gone into revamping the cooperative group structure. I mean, they certainly were a part of the clinical trials working group. They are a part of the operational efficiencies working group, the translational research working group. So I think that they have clearly weighed in heavily across the system already, and certainly continuing to play those roles will be critical moving forward. I've had a number of conversations with Jim and know that we are very interested in hearing from the advocates in terms of, what they think, how things are working, how things can work better, and certainly we acknowledge that there probably is at some core level no bigger stakeholder than the advocate. So we really want to partner with you folks to do that. I think that continuing to have a voice in the system and help us to help the patients is really the answer.
Would you like to take the next question?
Yes, please.
Okay. Carl Schwartz, your line is open.
Oh, thank you very much and for your work with this initiative. I'm another patient advocate. I serve as on CALGB as an advocate and also in the FDA program. And I would just like to encourage up front that you set up a portal on the Internet for input from the general community about a place or a way to submit ideas and about trials, and I think a place also to find out about enrollment issues as early as possible. I think most people will agree that that is a major challenge and an obstacle to progress. And other issues that could be addressed on such a portal would be conflict of interest questions, ownership, tissue ownership, and the like. So I just want to encourage that component and congratulate you guys on a great job.
Thank you so much. Shannon's going to give you, we put up, I guess it's a week ago yesterday, a website with the slide presentation we discussed with the cooperative group here, a whole series of facts about things that we've done separate from responsive to the IOM recommendations and the CDWG recommendations, but not in addition to the transforming and integration activities, but also there's a specific area for soliciting comments. So why don't you take down this URL?
Okay.
Absolutely. The URL is transformingtrials.cancer.gov. And I also want to note that I've had conversations with a number of advocates in the community and would welcome any and all comments that you want to make to me. And as folks know, I can always be reached either by email at bells@mail.nih.gov or by phone at 301-451-3393. And I always welcome feedback as well.
Right. And would you agree that that citing enrollment issues with the design of the trial, considering it as the rationale as a treatment decision, I think that's how participants look at it. How does this compare to the standard of care for my clinical circumstance? And if it fails in some way about that question, then I think that could be a major reason for failing to complete the trial. So what I found is sometimes trial concepts have a life of their own, and it's hard to reverse them once they get some momentum. So I think that's critical to getting on track.
Well, I would just comment to you that, when we began to set up these, there are pluses and minuses, but I think overall it's been a significant plus. When we began to set up the scientific steering committees, they're all set up with advocates involved, as well as, importantly, CCOP physicians, community physicians, because I've told this story on myself. You probably don't know this. Some years ago, I was one of the principal investigators and authors of one of the most infamous clinical trials that the NCI has ever supported.
Okay.
It's the so-called octopus study in advanced colorectal cancer, because it had 8 arms.
Okay.
Randomized trial. Now, scientifically, I'm telling you, it was great. Okay?
Right.
It was the state of the art for the time in terms of developing treatment for advanced colorectal cancer. In terms of getting even one patient to understand a consent form for a trial with 8 arms, it's probably the worst thing I've ever done in my life. Okay? And it was developed in an era when there were very few advocates that played a substantial role in trial development. I don't think that will ever happen again.
Well, I appreciate that story, and the consenting process is very challenging. And I just from my work with our community, we focus on the rationale as a therapy decision, and relating the study to the standard of care, and that seems a way to establish trust about the purpose of the research. If you can make that case, then patients will consider the trial. The only other point I'd like to make is, or question, is about tissue ownership. Is that still a major challenge?
I think there are ongoing legal issues and consent issue that are not all resolved.
Right. I'm wondering if the patient community could play a role in that. I think when ownership is contested, you know, it just seems logical that the patient should have some input in that.
Carl, these are obviously critical issues, but I also want to give the other callers an opportunity to ask questions.
Yes, of course.
Happy to engage in this conversation, maybe offline.
Sure, thank you.
Next caller, please.
The next question comes from Peggy Devine. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much for this opportunity and for all of your work. Because this has been coming for years, I've been asking researchers at meetings what they suggest. And one of the things that has come up several times, and I haven't seen it on any of the slides, is that cooperative groups be structured a little more like spores, where there's many more PhDs on the membership, so that questions are scientifically driven rather than so much weight on the clinician side. We now have probably 15 years worth of researchers who are used to looking at the clinical end of a research question. So I would hope that not only on the steering committees who are making the decisions, but on the cooperative groups themselves, there would be a little more PhD population in there so that the questions are scientifically driven. And that would be my hope.
I think that is a very important question and issue, one that I'm strongly in support of, and I think that I would rarely, if ever, want to say anything that would impute a point of view to our new director, but this I think I can. Dr. Varmus is very concerned that we try to make the trials that we do as most highly scientifically relevant and science-based with the appropriate correlative science that we possibly can. So I think he would be strongly in support of your statement.
Thank you so much.
The next question comes from Diane Paul. Your line is open.
Thank you. One of the things that I think we have to look at, though, as much as science is critically important, is in the end we still want treatments coming out of these trials for patients. So given that, are regulators and CMS also, in terms of their CER requirements that may be developing over the next few years, are they going to be involved at all in this process so that the RFAs that do get issues and the grants that get issues can lead to treatments where we don't end up with things getting stuck because the FDA can't approve them or CMS won't pay for them?
So, I can't speak for pharma, so I want to make that very, very clear, but I can speak for the trials that we engage in. And you may not know, and many on the call might not know, that we actually have a monthly meeting with Dr. Pazder and his associates. Every phase 3 trial that we are about to support goes to FDA, even if it is not a registration trial, is reviewed and commented on by FDA. Every new agent that we bring before we ever submit an IND, the ideas for those trials are discussed in this monthly meeting. They tell us about issues in advance of, so I could tell you that you wouldn't be surprised. I wasn't surprised by the announcement yesterday about Avastin because that's been shared. And so there is very close communication between the oncology division at FDA and by my division and our clinical colleagues.
And are they serving in an active capacity on the development of this project where the restructuring is happening? That's where my concern is.
So FDA and CMS representatives were part of the CTWG process.
Okay.
They were involved heavily in presenting to the IOM. And they, Rick is a member of CTAC, right? So there is a very substantial engagement.
Right. I do have one further question, and it was actually brought up with something Paula said. She mentioned four groups based on body parts, but I haven't seen anything about how is that has that been decided, or is that still up in the air? I just have no clue, and I was curious.
No, we have not. No. So basically, understand that our goal is to, and we will issue an RFA for up to four adult multidisciplinary groups. The investigators will have to decide how they best aggregate themselves to meet that need, a multidisciplinary adult oncology. It's doubtful. I'm just telling you personally, I have no idea how this is going to turn out. But personally, my guess is that some groups will be very strong in certain areas and others will be strong in other areas. But we need a system in which there is the national expertise to take on clinical trials across the board.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
And the next question comes from Barbara Lestage. Your line is open.
Thank you. Dr. Dorshow, I was very pleased to hear you say in your opening comments that you wanted to include in advanced medical imaging, but I'm concerned that as these groups are formed, that there be some way of ensuring that not only do they use what is currently the advanced medical imaging, but that within each trial there is some sort of imaging research question so that we can make sure that we continue to advance this area. And I'm wondering if you've given any thought as to how that might be done.
Yeah, so we've given it thought, and we actually had a great conversation with Dr. Schnoll yesterday. He, you know, I've been engaged with him for 6 years and think that he is really fantastic and very forward-thinking. And so whether this is going to happen, I can't promise you, but some of the things that we thought about. So first of all, I don't know if you know, we've very recently activated an imaging steering committee to help
yes.
us in two ways, not only to help focus the imaging-specific questions, but also to advise the whole enterprise on what the best imaging studies are to do in treatment trials, okay? But the other thing that we're well aware of is that Akron is extremely well-positioned to do specific imaging trials by itself, but it's the expertise represented by this community of radiologists who, until 10 years ago, were not organized at all to do clinical research. We've got to figure out a way to let me just make something up. This is not decided. Please understand, I'm just making this up, okay? But let's assume that Akron becomes part of one of these, that its infrastructure goes in as part of one of these four multidisciplinary groups, okay? Well, that would tremendously advantage that particular entity, okay? Which might be great. It might be great for that entity, and I think it would be great for Akron because they would have access to more patients for specific studies. But there is such expertise that we would also love to figure out a way for that expertise to be shared, in essence, as if it were a core resource for the entire country. So let me just tell you, these are the kinds of things. This is why we need at least 6 months to think through how best to put together an RFA, because we wouldn't want to disadvantage, we would not want to have bad trials be done by one of the groups that is not comprised of Akron, with Akron as part of it. You understand?
I do, and I entirely agree with you. I mean, I think it would be very unfortunate if Akron only went with one of the other groups. I think all of the groups that are going to be formed are going to need, you know, expertise in medical imaging and know how to include, hopefully, in almost every trial, some, again, not just the imaging itself for the scientific question so that we can continue to advance the field of knowledge.
So the only way that's going to happen is if actually in the review for this entity, you get major credit for collaboration.
Okay, well, however it works out, I hope that that's a strong consideration as you're putting the RFA together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this concludes the question and answer session.
I want to really thank Dr. Doroshow for joining us today, and that really is the least of it. I know that he and his team have been working incredibly hard, and I know he has to go as he's rushing off to yet another meeting at 2 p.m. But again, I really want to thank him for his time and thank his team for all of the work they have done and have gone into this. If you have not had the opportunity, the Cancer Bulletin just recently featured Dr. Doroshow, and it does a nice job of many of the things that we've talked about here today, as well as it gives a really nice perspective. So if you don't get the Cancer Bulletin, it is a fabulous resource, and I would absolutely recommend that you sign up for it. You can do that at cancer.gov. And also, again, the website where you can continue to get information about this, and that will be an ever-evolving website where, you know, the latest and greatest on what's happening will be posted. Again, that website is transformingtrials.cancer.gov. So definitely check back there on an ongoing basis to find out what's happening. Additionally, my office, again, will absolutely continue to be a resource for the community, not just around this, but around many, you know, the many issues that arise and that happen across the cancer research spectrum. Again, our website is advocacy.cancer.gov. And we will also continue to provide updates around this issue in the Neyland Digest, which is our bi-weekly, bi-monthly, really, twice a month, Federal Register, where we combine all the federal news around cancer and send it out in one easy-to-use forum. So, again, if you're not signed up for that, you can do that at advocacy.cancer.gov. And, again, thank you for your time, as always, for being here and providing us with the feedback, and look forward to working with you all in the future. Thanks so much.